Carl Olson. Great to sit down.
In person. Here we go.
Thanks so much for doing this. So
yeah, you bet.
The name of this series is All Roads Lead to Pullman.
Okay.
I love our community. And one of the things I love about it is that everyone is here for a reason. No one comes to Pullman by accident.
Right.
Right. People don't drift through. Right. You
right.
came here to start a new job, get a degree, start a company.
Right.
And it's just, it's such a cool part of our culture. It's a town full of go-getters and people who are looking to build stuff.
Right.
And so, you know, for a lot of people, the question I ask is, what brought you to the area?
Right.
But I think in your case.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I blame my parents for that one. So,
so born and raised. Okay.
Born and
the question is, what made you stay? What made you come back and why did you decide to put roots down here?
Yeah, good question. You know, I had obviously the ability to grow up in Pullman. I think it's a phenomenal experience to have as small a town as we do, but as big of exposure to cultural events, to athletic events, to all that. So I loved growing up here because of all the things I was able to do. I had the chance to get out. You know, as college hit, most of my high school buddies were thinking about going other places. There's an itch definitely in the high schoolers to get out, but a lot of them ended up coming back and I ended up just staying because I wasn't probably at the time as motivated to look at other options.
Yeah, I've got high schoolers myself. So we've all been through that in some way.
Yeah. So, you know, the itch was there. I will say that I finished out my undergrad here and then I left for a period of time. I went out for 8 months. I've never been out for longer than that from Pullman. So
8 months.
Oh, 8 months. So I was down in California.
That's a full-on bender, right?
Yeah. So was down in California working for the government for 8 months.
Oh, where in California?
Sandia National Laboratories in Livermore, California.
Yeah, yeah.
So
very nice. Lawrence Lab.
Yeah, I was across the street. So
oh, Lawrence, yeah, yeah.
Sandy is across the street. So did that. And then I was basically dissatisfied with working in a cubicle on even though the most interesting projects that are around. And so I thought, hey, I'll come back to grad school. And so I came back to look at going to different options. Don't get upset at me, but I went to UW for 2 quarters.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So
interview over.
I know. Hey, I repented, came back. I didn't get my finish off my degree there. I was just there for 2 quarters, came back, got my master's. And after my master's, had a chance to teach for just two semesters. And I was two-thirds time, but it was like, this is exactly what I love. So I just fell in love, not only with Pullman, but then with teaching.
You got the bug.
And I got the bug. So I went back to get a PhD just to have more credentials to come through and do that. And so I can say that if it's February or March, there's an itch to get out of Pullman for a period of time. You know, Pullman goes through its puberty phase that you never know what you're going to get in that time. It's a little bit of darkness. And but ultimately, I really enjoy being here. And so I would love to find a way to continue to make this place better.
Nice. So where are you currently working now?
Currently working at Washington State University. I teach civil engineering.
Oh, fantastic.
Been there for 15 years.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Well, I like you already.
Well,
That's right. I have a thing for civil engineering projects, as some people in the community might know.
Yeah. It seems like there's some pertinent ones that we need to talk about.
There we go. Like what?
Just the water issue is one. Looking at the transportation issue, getting downtown, of traffic out of downtown. Those are two core things that people talk about a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think having a depth of understanding of those is really important,
What
we know and what we don't know.
Okay, so I'm really interested to ask you then. I did some work on the RTPO project with Welsh Comer. I was part of that team.
Yeah.
Contract on the communication side.
Sure, yeah.
I'm not a civil engineer.
Yeah.
I'm a fan.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the long-term roadmap for rebalancing the traffic load in the town?
I think it's great. I actually approached one of the city council members 6 years ago on this when I was like, hey, I think Bishop Boulevard's a great option for what we could potentially look at, even as an intermediate phase. Like, I don't think there's a silver bullet to the whole thing. That report seems to show the same thing, but I think there's a lot we can do just by working with the state to get the state route through Bishop Boulevard. You got to look at, obviously, that's the phase one of that whole report, looking at intersection improvements. You got turning radius things and things like that that need to get done. And then there's a phase two where we look at Sand Road and then continued improvements on that. I think that's a phenomenal place to start. I think we've been talking about this for a long period of time, but putting dedicated money towards that is going to be something that is really important for our community.
Awesome. Well, let's see. We'll see how that works out. As a lot of people weren't aware, the report was just recommendations. Yeah. None of this is funded yet.
Yeah, no, 100%. Yeah.
Personally have gotten a little frustrated when some people have talked about a bypass as being the easy button for all things traffic, and without ever actually checking to see what it costs to do it.
Yeah.
And how many people's backyard we would have to seize by eminent domain.
For sure.
Which, if I know people in Pullman, they're not going to be thrilled about that.
Yeah. But that report actually puts some numbers of things, which I think is really helpful for moving forward.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Good. So because I'm curious, what made you get into civil engineering?
A random series of events, actually. So my undergrad's in mechanical engineering. I started out at WCU thinking either civil or mechanical. My grandfather was a civil. My dad's an electrical, was going to stay away from that. But
those electrical engineers, we have a lot of them in this town.
They talk about imaginary things. I don't get it. So, anyway, ended up in the mechanical realm. My master's, came back and did some, MEMS devices. It was microelectrical mechanical systems, really cool stuff, working with DARPA on that. But then again, once I loved the teaching aspect, the opportunity I had to teach was in civil engineering. So I did that, and then when I wanted to go for a PhD, the path of least resistance, the clearest direct route, was just to stay in that department because I knew the people. And so I had this weird shift working with tieback rods, which for earth retaining walls and things like that. But just to stay in the department, I became a civil engineer, and I'm a problem solver. And so that problem solver nature, whether I was mechanical, civil, or I think really in the teaching realm right now is where I put all that to use.
Awesome. So you said 15 years?
15 years, yeah.
Okay, so you've been there to see some transitions in the department.
Oh, yeah.
Changes in leadership,
yep.
Different deans.
All that kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's
fascinating. I think, you know, we're trying to figure out what WCU is going to become. I really hope that we double down on being a land-grant institution that's here to add value to the community, the state, and extend that nationally and globally, whatever.
Well, it sure seems like President Cantwell is signaling that direction.
Sure.
Of focusing on our strengths.
Yeah, well, looking at even chopping some administration, which is helpful. So
it is interesting. As a former WSU employee myself, I get the conflict there where we look at the numbers and go, okay, the university is administratively top heavy.
Yeah.
And yet all those jobs are our friends and neighbors.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
And when you do that kind of culling, it means contraction in our economy. It means job loss.
Yeah.
That's the catch-22. Everyone's in favor of cost-cutting layoffs as long as doesn't affect me.
Yeah, totally. And that's the nature. I mean, one of the things of being in political office, I think, is the realization that not everybody's going to get what they want. And you have to be okay with that at some level. So that's one of those hard truths at some levels. We can talk about different developments where that's kind of happened and stuff like that. But I believe in something called optimization theory, where we have overall goals we want to accomplish, and there's a whole bunch of levers in front of us that we can work on to get towards that. Those levers are all connected, though. Like, so you look at low-income housing. Well, people talk about their neighborhoods being affected or adding more people to that, and you got traffic and things like that. And there's never a situation where you're going to get everything you want.
I think that there's wisdom in that.
Yeah.
And then I think we all also sense that Pullman is at a bit of an inflection point right now, where we get to decide what kind of community do we want to become.
Yeah.
You know, we are no longer a one-horse town.
Yeah.
Right? We're not just a university with a town. We're a town that happens to have a university.
Yeah, absolutely.
And but also some things have stalled.
Yeah.
Right? Things that are outside of our control.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the demographic cliff with undergraduates, not our fault. The fact that we're a border community with a state that has much lower taxes and much lower minimum wage, not our fault.
Yeah.
But these are all factors that we have to deal with if we want to be sustainable for the future.
Absolutely.
So I'm kind of curious, what's your vision for Pullman? What kind of community do you hope we are in 5-10 years?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would take one of those aspects that we've talked about with WSU of being a land grant institution. Like, I think we need to return to our roots of who we are as land grant. I would love for this place to be known for the value that it brings to the people that come through here. I think we're, and that happens in different ways, right? So you look at the type of people that come through here. You got students that come through here, obviously. I think that's our bread and butter. We should be adding value to their education. And I think the return on investment, if you look at academia, is shrinking. In the city, I don't have as much governance over that, but I think the town and gown relationships can be really important, although I think it's going to get harder.
Yeah, so let's unpack that for a little bit, because, I mean, let's face it, WSU is a state agency. They answer to Olympia, not the Pullman City Council.
Yeah, totally.
WSU is going to do what it's going to do.
Yeah.
What's our opportunity as a community to step up and add that value that you're talking about? What's Pullman's role supposed to be as the host city of Washington State University?
Yeah, I think you need to ask what's the role there in that is really how do we work together, I think is a real question. I'd like to think win-win on this kind of stuff. And you have to then understand the difficulty of the problem well enough to understand what the potential solution can be. We can throw easy solutions at this.
So what do you think of the problem?
The problem I think is the attractiveness of Pullman. The way that this comes both from the city and from the WSU is that when I've sat on hiring committees at WSU, and I've been there for 15 years, I've seen significant number of our faculty searches fail because the spouse comes, they look at downtown, they look at the culture of the community, they're like, they cannot envision themselves here. If you build downtown in a way, it's a net benefit to SEL, it's a net benefit to WSU, just in that recruitment aspect, when you bring somebody here, and Black Cypress is not the only place that is the wonderful thing, you can only bring people there so many times. But I think really instilling some value in downtown from all three of those entities, as well as others in the community, high tide raises all ships, right? If you have that, people want to be here. That's a tough nut to crack, though. Obviously, this isn't. If it was an easy nut to crack, we wouldn't be talking about it.
Well, and it's also not a silver bullet, right?
No.
Because having a vibrant downtown doesn't change the fact that we are 90 minutes away from a freeway.
Yeah.
We are 5 hours away from the largest city in the state. Like, we can't change the fact of where we are.
Yeah.
And I've seen in my 25 years here, I've seen Pullman, or at least the university, go through cycles of a little bit of self-loathing. Let's try and pretend we're something we're not. I remember at one point when I was working at the Office of Research, we actually tried to talk about Pullman as a suburb of Spokane. It's part of the Spokane metro area, just a quick 90-minute drive.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, you're not fooling anybody here.
Yeah, totally.
How do we make Pullman attractive while still acknowledging the reality of where we are and really focusing on our strengths?
Yeah. I'm going to talk about kind of short game and long game on this one.
Sure.
I think we need to engage both of those. This is looking at the barriers that we have to become what we want to be. So, what should we become? We're an agricultural community, right? That actually people from all over the state come to provide value to themselves. I think on the short term, we need to look at ways to get more people to Pullman. When I was a kid here, there was a lot more concerts at Beasley. Mm-hmm. Right, there's a lot more cultural events. We obviously have our athletic events that are already here. We're gonna, see some of that change and shift with the university and things like that. but we have a place where people can come to. Like when you look at the losses that we had from having the FFA not come here for a period of time, that was a huge hit to us, right? And so,
You wouldn't think that an army of high schoolers wearing blue jackets would be that much of an economic boost, but when they're not here, we all felt it.
Yeah, absolutely. And so when you think about that, we have a place that we can have thousands of kids come to. We have all these empty dorms during this time. And so whether or not we start offering STEM camps, whether or not we have more festivals here, things like that, I think it's a good chance to look through some of that and say, we have a place that people can come to. That's a wonderful place where we can set the tone and the culture of what it's like to be here. Everybody talks about Walla Walla, right? And they have something to draw people there. What is it that they have? They have wine. We don't have wine here, right? And you can go to the grocery store. We have some of it, but not in the same way. I mean, we've been called the Tuscany of the Palouse or whatever it is, but I think that's a far stretch, right?
If anything, the Tuscany is the Palouse of Italy.
at least you understand. So I think some of that's, re-engaging with that. Now, some of that's really hard. You do have, the Gorge, which has sucked up a lot of the traffic of, these major concerts. But there was a lot more major concerts when I was a kid here. Mm-hmm. And what can we do to look at doing stuff like that?
Yeah.
We have some of the most cultural people. I grew up in Franklin Elementary School. And when I was there, it was the most diverse school in the entire state.
Really?
Because of all the international students that come here. Yeah. By nature, when you bring in a graduate school and you bring in all these graduate students, they come from all over the world. We should capitalize on that.
Totally.
Because we can then, I would have loved to see downtown, meal is great, but if we could have every country represented of all the foods that you could get, that'd be phenomenal. You have a cultural festival of the different things that we can celebrate in there. I think that's great. being an agricultural town, like doubling down on FFA stuff, we're an educational community, right? So bringing in STEM camps, things like that. I think I would love to look at how can we get more people here mm-hmm. that actually adds value, not just to suck money out of them, but really add value to their experience.
Yeah. And you mentioned concerts specifically. That's a little interesting because the economics of that have changed so much in the last even 10 years.
Totally.
Live Nation has bought up all the venues. Mm. You know, they now know precisely which communities make money and which ones don't.
Right.
There's fewer bands, more solo act. Like, just all these things have changed very much out of our control.
Right.
But I agree with you that we have something here that is worth coming to.
Right.
You know, if we could just host people better and attract more. You know,
right.
We brought up Walla Walla. Walla Walla didn't happen overnight.
Yeah.
You know, arguably, without WSU, there is no Walla Walla wine industry because of the research and, the extension program and all that.
That's fair.
And so there's things that we're doing today that may not pay off for 10, 20 years in terms of tourism and all that. You know, Walla Walla invested in its airport at the right time.
Yeah.
We're investing in our airport now. So
totally.
We're
primed for some of this.
So what are some of those, like, you said short game. What are some of the long-term things where it's like, if we invest in this now, a generation from now, this could be a destination where it's on a whole different level.
I think the long-term stuff and is going to be focused right now on some of the regulation that we have. I have talked to our state senator briefly just about what the ability is to affect regulation on, because we're a border town. Mm-hmm. Obviously, look at Clarkston, you look at us, you go to Liberty Lake, Newport, my understanding has a community over there that's on the opposite side.
Newport and Old Town.
Yeah, Old Town there. So you've got some challenges being on a border town. As I look at those, I think those are gas tax. I think those are energy regulations for buildings.
I think it's been 5 years since I bought gas in Pullman.
Yeah, totally. And then the minimum wage. So, the question I ask as I've been going around, to people's houses and knocking on doors is basically, where do you eat? Right? Moscow. Where do you shop? Moscow. Where do you get your gas? Moscow.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so
I do get my lunch in Pullman.
That's good.
I love Porch Light Pizza downtown.
That's phenomenal.
Rico. There's some great places to eat downtown.
Regardless, there's a bunch of people that go over that way all the time.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, and so...
So do we all.
Yeah. Regardless, so there's precedent in Oregon that their minimum wage is different up against the border of Idaho than it is in the metro in Portland, mm-hmm. right? And so I think approaching the legislature about some of these ideas actually came to me from some of the Democrats in the area. I'm like center right on some things. The Democrats basically saying, in order to survive, we need to work on some of like the regulation of being on a border town, right? And so I think there's some real central aspects of like approaching the legislature with a coalition of border town, either cities or counties, and saying, hey, what can we do to do that? That's going to take a lot of effort and basically collaboration do something like that. But I think if you start doing those things, I think the long-term benefit is, it's like planting a tree in your front yard. You're going to get some shade eventually, and we're hoping to look for that.
And I love that vision.
Yeah.
The reality, though, is that what you just proposed is in Olympia, not in Pullman.
Sure, yeah.
And doesn't necessarily require a city council seat to make happen. In fact,
for sure.
City council in some ways is a little bit more handcuffed when it comes to those sort of legislative affairs. You might be more effective if you set up a citizens committee or work through the chamber or something like that.
Right.
You know, what do you see as the purpose of city council? Like, what do you think city council is for?
Yeah, good question. My understanding is it's really around the policy of what happens in, you have the ability to set some policy. You also have the ability to interact with the different committees and things like that. So, going to planning commission and asking them to reevaluate certain things and then come back and having influence that way. I really think that the point of city council is saying, what are the policy issues that we have that are being a hindrance to what we're doing business-wise, development-wise, basically that is not allowing our citizens to flourish in some way, and can we get rid of those?
So let's talk about that for a little bit.
You
mentioned here and also on your website the issue of burdensome regulation.
Yeah.
Right? What are some examples?
So the regulations that I talked about are state-level regulations, right? So the question is, what can we do internally at inside the city for regulations? Burdensome stuff, I would say, there are things that are, were being, if you look at the short-term rental stuff recently that came through, like they added a layer of regulation that's different than what the state has, that adds extra things for us to do. That's a few more hoops to jump through. Now, I will say this, that the city was not trying to crack down and shut down short-term rentals. If you look at how it's done, then if you were saying that, they would have not opened up short-term rentals in the R1
totally,
zones.
Right. Like, like having an exit sign and an extra fire extinguisher is not going to shut down the Airbnb market.
It's not going to shut it down. I will say it adds a little extra barrier in there to do some things.
One more trip to Home Depot.
So it's minimal. There are some things there where you're discouraging some stuff. And also it's more the added regulation of basically being able to manage some of that stuff.
Sure.
It's probably minimal. I mean, okay. I know, I think there's under 10 that he've even
so done. So on your website, you said many businesses face hurdles from overlapping regulations that could delay projects and stifle growth. Tell me about that. And be specific.
Yeah, so I actually went to the city and met with them about some of these options. So one of them is a development that went in north of town, right? So you got a development that was going to go in north of town next to the high school up there. And so we were going to add some multifamily housing up there.
Was this your development?
Not my development. Okay. Yeah, not my development. So there's several things in that process of either the interpretation of the code or the city council getting involved. And this is where my big issue was, is the city council got involved when the development office said, hey, we don't need to do that. Specifically, what was that? Going back to my point that sometimes you don't always get what you want, right? So a new development's going to go in on the north side of town. The neighborhood says, hey, we don't want it. It's going to be extra noise. It's going to be more traffic, things like that. And so what happens is they went through the full permitting process in there. You see that when they looked at the traffic, the city themselves, just the development office, said there's not going to be an issue.
The development office meaning city staff.
City staff said there's not an issue. City council gets word of this because they have their constituents that are complaining, which they have the right to do. But then city council gets involved and they say there needs to be a traffic study, right? And so there was a, I think, $30,000 traffic study that ended up being required by the city council members, not by the city staff, right? What did the city staff say to the city council? It's like, you're not going to hit thresholds here. That's actually going to trigger anything, right? And so the city council got involved in regulation that was unhelpful to the developers. What's that extra $30,000 do? It just bumps up the price of the housing and things like that. So that would be an issue, example of where I think the city council should not get involved in regulation where they did. And I would not do things like that without, you know, specific understanding of something where it's has an ability to affect change.
So how do we change our culture so that we have more of a, I'm going to use a buzzword here, more of a yes culture?
Yeah.
Because right? I've heard from a number of people around town, both existing businesses and developers, that they're just tired of hearing no.
Yeah, right. So one is taking advantage. So one is taking advantage of what the city does offer. RJ Lott up there has done a great job with actually providing a Wednesday option for developers and businesses to come in if they're going to remodel or do a significant renovation or build. You can come in and meet with everybody that's pertinent to your project and understand the what are the pitfalls that you would fall into, what are the hoops that you have to jump through, and things like that. So one is being clearly understanding what you have available to you. I think also, as we look at the development process, like in order to be a yes town, you need to not be so risk averse, right? So if you listen to Thad, our city attorney, and as I've talked to the mayor a bit, like there are a significant number of times where you'll hear the term gift of public funds, right? And so is there a law that says the city cannot gift public funds to a business or things like that? Yes. Now, if you, there's an illegal aspect of that and an exposure aspect to that, right? And so when we need to understand the critical nature of how the city can get involved in being more of a yes person rather than being so fear of litigation that we basically say no to things, right? And so the example there is like, when you look into the code there is caveats for, if there's been a burden that's happened or economic development. For example, in the downtown corridor, after we did the project, looking at the seating down there, if you follow that, they were charged. It's a minimal amount, but you're still communicating to the city about things like to the businesses down there about how we feel about you, right? And I think that we should have basically gifted that for a period of 5 years or something like that, to basically say yes to them. And like, we want you here. How can we incentivize this more? But when we hear that gift of public funds, we got to be really aware of how we're being risk averse in that within the realm of exposure, right? And so being real clear about what we want to have happen, and that's a cultural shift that has to happen kind of from the mayor down, but it can be influenced by people pushing on it.
Yeah, it's interesting. I touched on that a little bit myself when we were working on the downtown project, because we were making videos to inform the public about what was going on.
Totally.
And one of the instructions I got was to not directly feature any specific businesses.
Right.
Which I went into that project thinking, this will be great. I'll film in a different business every week and we'll like do the circuit and all that and, you know, gift to public funds. And that was hard at first. I'm like, oh, yeah, this is terrible. But then as the project went along, not all the businesses were nice. And I started getting threats.
Oh,
emailed
wow.
to me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, I'm really glad I didn't give them grounds to sue me.
Yeah.
So I kind of understand some of the risk averseness. I also want us to be more proactive.
Yeah.
It's just finding that sweet spot, right?
Yeah.
Because in a community this size, we've gone a long time we've gotten away with a lot of things when it comes to that. There's been a lot of things that probably should have been addressed sooner, like the short-term rentals.
Sure. Right?
And, you know, our library being another example where turns out it was operating for 100 years without proper paperwork in place, you know? So all that deferred maintenance, it's going to take a while to get through all that.
Yeah, I would agree. And I would say that I'm in a learning posture here. I was planning on running for city council after my kids were out of the house. And then because of just the current state of things, I was like, I want to make sure that there's somebody in there with some common sense and willing to tackle some issues.
Well, let's talk about that. What was the inciting incident that made you decide, I got to do this now. I got to throw my hat in the ring.
I think the short-term rental thing, watching the city council deal with the county assessor when they came into the city council meeting, and then watching businesses close. As I saw, kind of that was the stacking of different things in there. Those, whether which one actually broke me, I don't have to go back and look. But when I saw, let's go through those there, like the short-term rental stuff, I saw where city council members really weren't understanding fully what the process was, and then asking to, you know, add extra legality to something that was already regulated by the state, I thought was maybe a little bit of an overreach. Obviously, not everybody voted to push that through. There was votes on both sides. But just their generic understanding of the process, I was a little upset at just the fact that they didn't really understand what had happened up until that point with the Planning Commission, and it wasn't well understood at that point. Watching them with the when the county assessor came in, and I'm sure you're familiar with the tax issue on the south side of town, started now on the north side of town, and the disproportionate amount of
ourselves for our property taxes to go up by a lot.
Yeah, exactly. So the when you got six zones and they put one up and they were out of compliance, and then to get back into compliance, they made it worse. Right. And so when they were questioned again, when the city council asked this county assessor to come in, they didn't really understand the situation well enough to ask good questions. So I wanted somebody on council that could actually articulate what the problem was, understood in its depth what was going on there. Some of these things are things that affect me because I live on the south side of Hill. Sure. I have short-term rentals. And so I was pertinent to that. But it does take in a certain amount of effort to research and understand what's going on.
So in a best-case scenario, what do you think the city council's role is in a county issue, county auditor issue?
Yeah, I think, well, it's a good question. I don't think we have the ability to like affect them other than by influence. But I think what you are doing is communicating to the public. It's your chance to communicate to the public what the problem is. Mm-hmm. So we had one of the citizens got up at the beginning of that meeting and said, here's what the law states, right? And
I remember them saying a little bit more forcefully than that, but.
So here's what the law states. And then when they came through, when the county assessor was in there, she basically said, hey, but we have an option for people to challenge their valuations. And I was like, well, that was kind of a side issue from this whole thing. I do think that some properties are undervalued and should be valued correctly. But the fact that we did it disproportionately was the issue. And so to communicate to the public and draw somebody in to actually help them understand what's going on, to create a base of people that are willing to fight for this, I mean, it would need to go to a lawsuit to really get this to get figured out. There's been efforts to do that. The more people you get on board with that to help in that process is where it could actually go.
So everything you just described, I'm very much on board with.
Sure.
From in terms of being active, civically engaged, you know, even to the point of filing a lawsuit.
Yeah.
None of those were the job of city council.
Sure.
like as a city councilor, it's not your job to bully Colfax into having their staff operate a certain way.
Yeah.
So what would you say the right role of the Pullman City Council is in county affairs?
I'm going to go with, I don't know at this point. I am in a learning posture, and so I'd be happy to take more advice from people on that one as I go through it. This would be a case where I'm entering into something I wasn't planning on, put a ton of time into preparing for, but I'm ready to learn in that process.
This is something that I'm really pushing hard with all the candidates.
Sure.
Is, you know, what do you think the role of city council is? Because what I keep hearing over and over again is some form of, well, city council is the easy button to make Pullman run right. And all, yeah. if you just elect me,
yeah,
just elect me because I'm God's gift to Pullman, right? Everything's going to go right. And I'm like, hold on.
Yeah.
You know, like, city council is to the mayor as the state legislature is to the governor, right? You are there to pass rules, regulation, laws, and to set the budget.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah.
You know, like I've known people who thought, well, if I get on council, I can walk into the city manager's office and tell them to waive fines.
Yeah.
Or change the way that they do inspections.
Yeah.
Or I'll be able to speed up the process on how to get a permit. And none of that is true.
Right.
The city council doesn't run the city.
Right.
And I think people are a little confused about what those seven seats are actually for.
Right. They do have the effect on policy, though, right? I mean, and I would agree that the
through a deliberative process, passing regulations,
right,
and then the staff implement those regulations,
sure,
which is why you have to be willing to do the hard work of writing
work.
Really good regulations.
Yeah, for sure.
And, you know, I just want to make sure that with city council, we have people who are prepared for, let's just face it, the boredom.
Yeah.
The tediousness.
Sure.
Of passing these rules that have broad implications. You don't get to walk down the hallway and tell RJ, 100%. Hey, treat our developers better.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a law. That's
no, but you can affect. Yeah. So I would agree with you. So one is, I would say I'm campaigning on the platform of incremental change.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
tell me about your platform. What's your stump speech?
My stump speech is basically looking at the risk averse nature of Pullman, right? And as the short game of trying to say, hey, approaching the mayor on some of this stuff. Now, as you're talking here, there needs to be policy change on some of that stuff. And so,
for example,
for the policy of like, how much insurance do we ask of somebody? Can we change what's required in the policy for downtown? How much insurance are we required to have people on the streets down there?
That's a great example.
Yeah.
I'm not a developer. I really want to hear from someone with experience.
Yeah.
What is an appropriate amount of insurance for something like that? And then how do you go about setting that standard?
Right. Yeah. So this is a really great question. And I think one is to just realize that there's a variation on this, right? And so this is kind of like setting a speed limit. When you say, hey, what speed limit should we have between Pullman and Moscow? And some people are going to say, well, I want 70 because I want to get there as fast as possible. Some people are going to say 45 because I like having a safer realm, right? And so different people are comfortable with different levels. Where do we set it at that's reasonable? Mm-hmm. You got to get into the insurance realm and start saying things like, what's precedent for people suing downtown in this kind of a scenario to understand what are the actual costs associated with typically with this kind of thing? And is it going to fall outside of that?
Yeah.
And so if you start to understand what the precedent is for typical cases and all that kind of stuff, that's where we're looking at the threshold of the dollar figures. I don't know that, right? I know insurance agents in town, and so I need to find out what those numbers are. But that's the kind of like systematic research that I'd love to be able to kind of push on to be able to figure out.
Yeah. Awesome. So what are your big issues that you're running on? Take a look at your website.
Yeah.
I want to hear from you.
Yeah. Again, the big issues are incentivizing business. And when people heard incentivizing, like, are we giving money to incentivize business? I'm no more talking about trying to take out barriers there. Mm-hmm. And so as they run businesses, fewer
sticks, not talk about adding carrots.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And so some of that's like in the downtown, like we talked about, the insurance, the fees for having seating downtown. Those are just examples of that. Mm-hmm. As I get into this, I'm going to be looking at what are the barriers that keep people from getting into there. If you look at a business researching Pullman saying, hey, we want to come here, what are the major contributors to them saying no to this place? And do we have any effect on some of that stuff, similar to the insurance for downtown sidewalks and similar to the cost of doing, you know, having outdoor seating and stuff like that? What are the barriers to something like that? So that's what I talk about when I say incentivize business there. Same thing with development. As I've talked to the development office, I think they actually do a really good job with the overall process. I think part of this is keeping city council out of it when we're talking about like the traffic study and things like that, when it comes to interjecting to trying to communicate to your constituents that you care about them, some of that's communicating to them, hey, it's within the laws that we have set. And so we have to, this is where we're going to go within that.
To minimizing friction.
Minimizing with friction the private there. Sector. Yeah. But I'd like to talk to developers still and say, hey, what are the limits for you investing in not downtown, but just in Pullman in general? I would love to see more what I call starter houses in Pullman. Look at a $250,000 to $300,000 house. I would love to get back to being able to have something like that, a community that's predominantly owner occupied and not just sent out for rentals, right? And so something like that is what I would love to say, hey, developer X, you know, if you were to think about doing this, why would you not do this in the city? You know, and say, okay, are there any policy issues incorporated into that that we can then look at, you know, mitigating at some level?
Makes sense.
And then
so those two,
and then you're going to look at the last one is just tourism, increasing tourism to Pullman. So I'd love to see us increase the amount of people that come to Pullman. I'd love that the summers were actually more full. To be honest, I actually love it when all the students go away. I'm sorry.
It's not like it used to be.
Yeah,
15 years ago, the town would clear out the afternoon after graduation. You could park anywhere you wanted.
Anywhere you want.
And it's not that way anymore.
Totally.
And that's great.
Yeah.
We want to be a 12-month community.
Yeah. So again, are there issues that we can look at in terms of incentivizing people to come here? You know, and again, there are, I think to your point, what are the policy issues that we can really work on to kind of get us in that direction?
Awesome. So you said on your social media, in the last 5 years, we've seen a decrease in confidence in the city of Pullman.
Yeah.
What do you believe caused this perceived loss of confidence, and what would you do to help restore it?
Yeah, I think two things are what caused it, right? So one of them is just when we see businesses close, everybody goes, why did that close? Now, take Arby's, for instance, when Arby's went under. I don't think that was predominantly a Pullman issue. That was partly an issue of like, hey, Arby's requires you to improve your space every so often.
The home office did some things and the owners decided not worth it.
Yeah, not worth it. So, but still, when a lot of those things start happening, when we got the movie theater, when we got building supply, when we got restaurants going under, there's a visual from the city that like things are not going well and people
totally.
Start talking.
Totally.
So we have conversations because that's happening, right? I think as well, for me, it's the personal conversations. I can't tell you the number of times people have come up to me like, well, we're thinking about moving to Moscow. What do you think? You know, like, and so those conversations continue to happen, right? And I think those conversations are sometimes predicated on kind of what's happening in Pullman. I think if you look at WCU, that's the other thing, is the WCU versus U of I, you're seeing different things happen there in terms of populace come in here. We're seeing U of I grow. We're seeing us kind of shrink over here.
Yeah.
And so when those things are happening, you have just a decreasing confidence because there's a seed plant in your head. What's wrong with this place and stuff like that. So
yeah, it's interesting. I got here 25 years ago and the WCU U of I situation was almost exactly the same.
Yeah.
Because in 2000, we were just a year or two past the riots in Pullman.
Right.
And U of I had record enrollment.
Right.
Right. And a similar situation with leadership. Leadership at WSU was kind of floundering. U of I was on the increase. And then it flipped for the majority of the time I've been here.
Yeah.
And now it seems to have flipped back, but hopefully not for long, right?
Yeah.
If anything, we want to see both our universities 100%. Thrive,
yeah, absolutely.
Right? But right now, I mean, U of I is seeing record enrollment, even with the demographic cliff.
Yeah.
You know, there's fewer high schoolers to go around. U of I is somehow gobbling up a bunch of them.
Yeah.
While WSU is struggling with recruiting.
Absolutely.
All the things you mentioned about confidence are in my mind externally focused.
Okay.
Like those aren't like city council can't make Arby's stick around. City council can't make Pullman building supply economically feasible the same year that Home Depot opens, right?
Yeah.
The city council can't bring enrollment overnight back to the university.
Right.
We can make the community more attractive.
Yeah.
So when you say confidence, are you talking about just the vibe of the economy or are you talking about something deeper when it comes to relating with our public officials?
Yeah. I will say that in conversations I've had with developers that they are frustrated with the city, right? And so that's like that again was a city council issue of the traffic study that came through there. Like so, there's a developer that's saying, "Hey, I'm frustrated with all this going on, and this has been really hard to do because of the runaround on certain things." So there's some aspect of I would say businesses and developers and how they're interacting with the city that for some reason is, you know, like. If you talk to the downtown businesses, they've been frustrated with the city, right?
And understandably so.
Yeah, so we have these frustrations, and I think there are some policy issues built into those that can be addressed. Some of that is, outside the realm of what the city staff can do, for instance. You know, if somebody comes in frustrated about energy code, this is what the law states. I have to do this. This isn't an exposure thing where we'll allow you to go 50% and hope we don't get sued. That's that's not the case of the exposure that I'm looking at there. That's a policy issue that's set outside of us at the state. So I think there's that's where I would go in this is, again, I'm trying to be a researcher in this as well as to talk to developers and to talk to business owners about what are the policy issues, I think, to your point, of that can actually be amended here or who do we approach? And I do think that city council at some level can initiate connections with people to bring a coalition or form a committee to help work towards some of that stuff that's on the larger scale that's outside of our current scope of ability. Yeah. So
we've kind of danced around the downtown project a little bit.
Yeah.
And as a civil engineer, I'm actually really interested in your thoughts on that.
Yeah.
Because it was a very divisive project.
Yeah.
Lead up to it.
Sure.
The project, my perception is we had about 6 months where things were going really well. And then at the very end, the community was up in an uproar.
Yeah.
And now that it's done, no one's saying anything negative at all because it's really pretty and the traffic is calmer and and we're just kind of forgetting that ever happened.
Yeah.
But I'm kind of curious, you know, when it comes to reestablishing confidence with our city government and with city officials and, you know, even city council, what do you feel like we did well with the downtown project? What do you think we could have done better? Both from an engineering standpoint, but also from a government relations standpoint.
Sure. Yeah. So what did we do well? One is we fixed a bunch of utilities that you'll never see, right? And we have to acknowledge that this project was predicated on the fact that it's a utilities project. It's not a facade project. I actually hear people that are still frustrated at the facade, think it should look better. I think that's fine. Everybody can have their opinion, right? I think it looks better than it did. Our sidewalks are better than they were.
Pretty dramatic before and after.
So in terms of what did we do right? I think we improved the facade of downtown. I think we accomplished a project that had a chance of being jettisoned if we didn't pull the trigger and actually get the funding and do that. We could have been in a situation if we couldn't find a developer or a contractor to do this thing and couldn't trigger that money at a certain time, we'd be actually on the hook for that and have to do a bond for it. I will say briefly, if you look at Lewiston's going to have to do a major project down there. That's going to be a $50 million project for their utilities and their downtown, looking at that. And I think when we start to see the contrast there, we're going to be really grateful for what we actually did well over here.
Well, Lewiston is almost in the exact same situation with their aging underground.
Yep.
Problem is their pipes already broke, whereas ours hadn't yet.
Yeah.
We did preventative maintenance. They actually started digging already in the hopes that the bond would pass so they could finish the project.
Right.
And now they're going to have to seal up the streets and put it back exactly the way it was, which is not great.
Yeah.
They're gonna have to go to all the hassle. So all the downsides of the project, meaning disruption to business, disruption to foot traffic, all the inconvenient stuff still is gonna happen, way less of an upside.
Yeah, absolutely. When we get into what we didn't do so well, I think we need to realize that we're kind of in a disgruntled marriage right now, in the downtown. You've got the business owners in the city and there's a lot of us them talk, right? And so we need to say, what caused that? I think one of the things that the city maybe could have done better is a healthy expectation for what the timeline was going to be, right? The mere fact that we put this thing in there as a 3-month project, just as and just sent it out to bid shows that I think there's just a hope deferred makes the heart sick, right? Put this out there, it's like, hey, we can probably get it done really quick. And so you're communicating, you're not only hoping, but you're communicating something to the general public, to the business owners about what could happen.
And I'm glad to hear a civil engineer say that.
Yeah.
Because there's been people who have looked back at that first 3-month bid, the one that got no responses.
No responses. Yeah.
And said, well, see, they're messing with us because they were going to do it this amount of time. They knew they could.
Right.
And then they're, and it's like, hold on.
Yeah.
That was never realistic in the first place. Probably shouldn't have even run that proposal.
Yeah, absolutely. So the fact that we went 6 months and then we went over, right? And so we should have had a more healthy understanding of what that looks like. If you set expectations early, it's going to be a lot better than, oh, we can do this, or we can do this, and then we can't end up doing that, right? And so I think that's where the city probably got into the issues. And I would like to talk more with downtown businesses. I've talked with quite a few of them, but the communication, we could have walked, the downtown a bit more and kind of communicated a bit more. I think there's some things that could be done better on that front. I'm not nuancedly have a nuanced understanding of all of the communications that did go out there. This is, I think it's important to work as like, how do we mend this relationship of the disgruntledness between the two of them?
I was very involved in the communication side, and I could tell you some stories.
Sure. Yeah.
But I probably should wait a couple months on it. But what matters is going forward and mending that relationship.
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to take to take this from a disgruntled marriage into one that's thriving and full of trust?
Yeah. I mean, there's a family motto that we have is seek first to understand, then to be understood. Right. I think when I do, as much as I say things like not everybody's going to be happy and stuff like that, I think there's a real value in actually spending time and listening to people. And when I've done that, both with the businesses that I know downtown and with the development office, every time I go into conversation, I learn something new, right? And so in the process of learning about one of the development on the north side of town, like I learned about things that the city did I wasn't aware of, right? And so in that process, it takes time and it takes listening, but also it takes somebody to kind of go in there and grab people and kind of get them to continue to talk, I think. So that, it doesn't guarantee things, but I think I've noticed that bitterness grows when there's a lack of connection with people. And so when you don't have a direct ability to communicate with somebody or you're resistant to that, it's much easier to put things on them that are not true.
Yeah. So as a city potential city councilor, if you were to win this primary and win the general,
sure.
What would you do to personally in that role to help mend trust and confidence in the community?
Yeah, you have been involved in some of this stuff longer, so I would pitch an idea to you and hope that you would come back to me. And let me just pitch the idea.
Of course.
To form a committee of business owners and city staff that would be able to kind of meet every so often to have an ability to communicate about how things are going. It's a once a week meeting, and we have certain representatives from the city, we have certain representatives from the downtown businesses, and to have them meet and brainstorm and think, how are things going, communicate how it's been doing. I think that's the kind of thing that I could have influence to be able to do. And it's not necessarily policy, but I think there is the ability from city council to put together committees or things like that.
Yeah. Well, you know, and we also have the Downtown Pullman Association,
right,
which GPA. Has a relatively new director with Bobby Ryder, who's she's very involved.
Oh, yeah.
What's going on. Yeah. We'll go get
She's done phenomenal.
So there's other entities. You know, we have a new director at the Chamber of Commerce.
Right.
So we have existing groups that are doing or are supposed to do exactly what you just described.
Right, yeah.
So in a city council, elected official role, what would you try to do to help bridge better relationships between all those different players?
Yeah, so first thing is I would make some, like, I would probably see what we can do on the policy side for, the downtown seating and for the insurance to see, like, are these accurate numbers and things like that? And to say, hey, can we put in accurate numbers here? And basically as a gesture to say to the downtown that we're trying to work for you in terms of the policies, the things that you affect you on a regular basis. I think the insurance stuff is much larger cost than the actual downtown seating is, but both of those have a communication to them. Yeah. So that's one thing I would do on
and
that way.
And insurance, that is a city thing. That's not county or state. I don't own a business downtown, so
yeah,
no.
I believe the city dictates the amount of insurance, right? So this was the two, they were...
Are we talking about insurance for outdoor seating?
Insurance for outdoor seating, yeah.
Got it. Okay. So one small, that doesn't apply to every business.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, correct. Okay. But it just, everybody has the option to come in there and do that. So
makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
So that would be one aspect. I would just, again, I would talk to the other downtown businesses about what other policy issues, like, is shoveling your sidewalks a regular basis and enough of a nuisance that we could ask the city to do that and to do something like that? What are the things that we can do? Those are policy issues, right?
Well, fortunately, city maintenance has infinite time and infinite money to shovel every sidewalk in town.
But I will say that you gotta find and identify what are the core issues that can be worth it. Everything has a cost. That's an optimization.
Absolutely.
It's the optimization thing. So I'm just saying right now that I think it's worth taking city money or city resources and investing them downtown, because I think that's a crucial part of what I'd like to continue to do that, essentially. So
something that a lot of people don't quite wrap their heads around is just the reality of the budget situation in Pullman as related to the tax base.
Sure.
Because on the surface, we are a very affluent community.
Oh, yeah.
With a lot of, I describe Pullman as a town full of conservative farmers that has gotten really used to having nice things.
Yeah.
Right? This is a conservative town that will vote for every school bond,
every
education thing, and will vote for some both right and left-leaning causes if they believe in it, because this is a town that
Do you believe nice we should things. Have all sorts of things?
Absolutely. But at the end of the day, we are a town of 35,000 yeah. with a tax base of half that or less.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And we have a balanced budget. We don't have a huge debt. We're not running yeah. big deficits.
Right.
And so if we talk about putting money towards something,
yeah.
it's always going to come with a question, okay, what would you trade off?
Sure.
You know, it just so happens that the projected cost of an additional fire station is about what we spend on a library, on our library yeah. every year.
Right.
That's the equivalency, mm-hmm. right? I don't think yeah. anybody wants to trade off our library.
Yeah.
So I'm just asking you, like, how do you approach that cost benefit conversation as you're looking at putting additional resources places?
Yeah.
Because there isn't a big pile of money to draw from.
Totally. Yeah. One of the things I know at this point that I would love to investigate, and I'm happy to realize that there's more things out there that I don't know. I think our budget's on the order of $97 million, something like that.
I'm not sure.
So, something like that, right? But we have a capital improvement project mm-hmm. every year. And so when I've seen those come through and I've looked through those in the past, it feels patchwork to me. It feels like there's, hey, we're doing a whole bunch of little things. Mm-hmm. And I would like this to say, hey, for a period of time, let's focus on what we really want to do. And so that means that you might have to pull some money away from certain things and put it into others. The case when I saw a CIP a long time ago was seeing when we're looking at some of the downtown stuff and we had a whole bunch of, there was money for Pine Street Plaza and monies for High Street Plaza. And we're like separating all this out and trying to do everything. And it feels like you're trying to, water your lawn for a minute and a half a day, hoping that everything's going to be fine. You're just throwing little bits of money at certain sections, right?
I feel like you're criticizing my lawn because I'm a little brown these days.
Well, mine is.
But the
mine,
metaphor
mine
works.
Mine is too, right?
Metaphor works.
So it's one is that I need to get into the budget to really understand some of that stuff. So capital improvement projects is one aspect of that. But you're always going to then get, okay, well, the police want this, the fires want this, we want a new welcome sign, we want, all these things, and we can't do everything, right? And so that optimization theory processing is saying, what's most important to us?
Yeah.
And I think having a vital downtown is, to me, one of the biggest things. Obviously, there's, and what that does is it begins the cascading process of building that economic process. So if we get more people downtown, we have more people eat here, we have more people shop here, then we get more tax dollars here and we build that. And then so the peripheral things that we love to have that maybe we can't always have right now can hopefully come from as we build on that.
Love that. So love that. I just have one last question, but is there anything else you want to add? What do you want people to know about your campaign?
What do I? What I would love to have them email me if they want me to stop by their door. I've probably knocked on 300 doors at this point.
For you.
Trying to just actually get to know people. The thing that I've probably appreciated most is there's some people I've spent like 45 minutes, an hour in their house, and just they're really interested. They're really invested in trying to figure this thing out. Mm-hmm. What I'm saying is I would like to continue to work through these problems together. I've actually learned a lot from listening to people. I also think that I have a lot to give from basically my education and how I process information. I am an engineer by nature, so I am able to take problems and like kind of detail them out and figure out what the things we need to focus are. So when you're talking about, the moving traffic out of downtown or the water issue in town, like I'm able to read those reports in a way that's helpful to understand when I haven't seen sometimes city council have that expertise. But I have an expertise. The city also, like the city constituents have an expertise. Like they have passions and things like that. As you start getting into this, you realize how many people are actually doing things in our community. I'd love to just increase that and work together with people, even when we disagree. And I think a final thing that we haven't mentioned here is like, I think that when we work together in that, if we're really gonna do that effectively, we're not always gonna agree on stuff. But if we can find some common ground inside of that and agree to disagree on certain things, and that really is predicated on this idea that we have a little bit of a thicker skin, that you can hear somebody disagree with you and not be upset with them as though they're a bad person, right? Automatically. And so I think as I've done that in some people's living rooms, talking through some of this stuff, we've actually come to really healthy conclusions on what could actually be some things where we can focus on this neighborhood or do some certain things that way. So, yeah. That's,
love that.
That's
where
finding
common ground. That's awesome. Well,
yeah.
Hopefully something that we're all on the same page about is that the future of Pullman is bright.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's your pitch for Pullman? If you were to meet someone who was looking for a town to relocate to or a place to start a business or, maybe to retire in, what would you tell them about this amazing place on the Flues?
I would tell them about my childhood and what it was like to be here. And I think we can be back. We maybe don't have a few of those things, but like I came here on a regular basis. I would go to Cougar football games in a town of 25,000, right? I had the exposure to an NCAA college football team. I could go, not anymore, I could go walk onto the middle of the football field on a Thursday.
Oh yeah.
And just throw the ball around.
I used to take my kids down there and do the same thing.
Like, so we had access to amazing education here. I think we're struggling with a little some of that, but I think we can regain some of the traction of what our education is here. I mean, to grow up roaming the neighborhoods, to walk down every summer on a regular basis, just walk down to Rainy Pool and just exist down there and just hang out downtown at NB Tubble Card Shop. Like, those are things that are built into my memories from growing up here. And I think you can raise a family here and have that same thing.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Carl, thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
And wish you best of luck.
All right. Appreciate it.